Henrik and me want to speak about how we want to use the filter feature to really open up the distribution. We want to talk about how the current situation is and how we think that in the future really the best distribution comes out and not a distribution which is done by someone who has some ideas. The status quo, where we are now, is we have still the SUSE internal build system, and we will keep it for all the enterprise products which are not part of OpenSUSE. But for OpenSUSE, we have the external build system. Right now, we build still internally our distributions. We have the sources here, we build them, and we get the binaries, and we sync the sources and the binaries also to the outside already in the build service, so that you can reuse the sources. The sources are already in time there, the binaries are always there, everybody can see them, reuse them, modify them. And they can be used to utilize the add-ons, so further packages on top of the distribution. What you see, what's missing, is for one, there happens no build in the external system right now. That means from an external user, it's not reproducible how the distribution gets created. And the other problem which is visible, the errors pointing only in one direction. That means when you change, once you change something here, in this, you have actually to change something there. And this is internally, and only a number, a very few number of internal people have access to them. So it just works around Paxilla and so on, but it's not a convenient process to contribute something to the distribution. Some of facts. What we want. We want, of course, to make it easy that everybody can change something as easy as possible. Wikipedia, for instance, has such a success because it's so easy. You don't even need an account there. You go there and you fix a missing comma or whatever there. It's so easy, so it has a success. That's the direction we want to go as well. On the other hand, we have lots of packages, lots of open source projects. And when you talk with all these people, you find out that all of them behave different. So, for instance, there are open source projects like Zamba. There is more or less not really discussable to add a patch on a package because that's evil. Only the good code from the Zamba SVN is good enough. While others, like the Linux kernel, basically build on this that distributors add packages. They don't intend to have the original code and no one should modify. They hope that the distributors wants to modify and enhance the kernel. So you see that all these different kind of people and projects are there, and we can't change them. We have to live with it that they behave in a different way, and we have to cover this. The package itself works different ways. They have their own scripts and work in different ways. They have, like, say, no, this is my package. I want to work on this, while others say, no, hopefully everybody is editing this spec file and help me. On the other hand, there are conclusions what everybody wants to have. Everybody wants to have a stable base. Of course, the base should be always stable because you want to develop a new part of the software and you want to find out if your changes are working and you don't want to deal with a broken base system. So the base system is something what should be really conservative in this way. There should be, of course, a way also to experiment with the base system. But it should be not in the same place as the other users and other developers are using it. Another thing is that we have software in one place, the sources, but they are reused in multiple ways for different approaches. For example, the standard base packages are also used to build an embedded solution. So the glibc package has a flag that you can build a reduced version. And of course, it's good to have it in one place and to try to keep all the source changes and sources in one place. But on the other hand, we need to be open that people can modifications to it in all forms. So the result of this is that we have multiple workspaces. This is what we explained before with the project model. And we need defined processes, how sources can be changed. And it's, in first place, important that the processes are visible, that easy to understand, and everybody can follow them. Another effects. We have different classes of requirements in the source. We have contributors who are basically mostly novel employees who work on the Linux Enterprise part. So everything what's part of the Linux Enterprise has a requirement that a full source review needs to be done before it can be checked in. That's a requirement from EAL certification. It's no discussion for novel to use this. And on the other hand, there must be people who are able to offer us maintenance support for 7 years. So it's not only configure, make, install, and package it. You need to understand it because you need to be able to fix any customer request later. Of course, we could say for OpenSUSE, but it's not our problem. We can ignore this. But as a result, the novel employees wouldn't work in OpenSUSE anymore. And they do quite a lot of stuff. They build the kernel, the GCC, and so on. They do high quality work, and it's good to have this high quality work. On the other hand, OpenSUSE, we think it's important to have some source review, but hey, a peer review could be also enough. A peer review means that people can check in, other people see the changes in the mailing list, and if someone is really doing something evil, we will see it long before the release, most likely. And of course, we have only 2 years of maintenance, and in first place, we only need to do security maintenance really urgently, and okay, some other urgent bug fixes. But we don't have the need that we can only use this software when we are sure that we can fix every bug in 7 years. And of course, there are leaf packages, and leaf packages, they are there. It's good that they are there. People want to have them as updated as often as possible. And if there's really a serious problem with it, for instance, you start the application and it removes your home directory, okay, if you can't fix it immediately, we simply remove it. But there are no further requirements. So these are the requirements, and we don't want. It's not a question which way we want to go. We want to offer all possibilities as a service, and we want to offer an advanced service for all these groups. Okay.
Okay, so knowing all these requirements that we have, that's only part of the requirements. We just showed that there are more, but knowing these, we started to look at how other distributions do that. I mean, there are already processes and methods in place how to contribute to a distribution. So we sat down and we looked at the most prominent ones, if they would fit us. And the most classical way is to just create a contributors case. You just look out for people that are reliable and that are interested in doing contributions, and then you just include them into your contributors case. In most distributions that do that this way, they do it by signing a contract or some other agreement on the quality and on the deliverable from the contributions. And this of course makes sense if you want to have a small group of contributors with high quality contributions. That absolutely makes sense for that case. But for us, it's not really a good model because we want to broaden our contribution contributors space. So we want more contributors and not less but more high quality. So, and on the other hand, that thing that you base the right of the contributor to contribute something on people, so you have to prove before that you are worthy to contribute, is not really our idea of an open development process. And that's because it just puts all the burden of proof to that you are a valid contributor to the to that one that wants to be a contributor. And the distribution or the project has to do nothing but to just sit there and look and say, oh yeah, your contributions are very good, please come in. And the contributor has to prove that he's worth it. That's very, very unattractive for contributors. I mean, if you think about it, that you have to, you can't contribute and see the results directly. You have to prove before over and over again until you are noticed. Then there's another way how to do it. Basically, you split your distribution in an important and an unimportant part. What's here as core and non-core. For the unimportant part, you make it easier to contribute. There are not so much so many rules. There are not. You don't have to sign a contract. You just have to say, I want to package this, and because it doesn't really matter, because it's not the important part of your distribution. The important part, you leave the requirements to become a contributor at the same level as the process I showed before. So what you do here is you attract people that want to contribute for the first time. That's a good thing. I mean, you really build up people that learn how to contribute and what it means and what it means to maintain something in distribution. But on the other hand, you don't attract any powerful contributors because they still have to prove that they are worthy to work on the core of the distribution. And well, given the facts that model doesn't really fits us well, because it's better than the first process, but it's not what we want and what we understand as an open development process.
As I see it now, is this not how it works now? You have to court people, which is novel, and the rest, which is the community,
not
a little bit, or?
It's a bit, yes, but you don't say that the current situation is a good situation.
No, but because it says how it could be, and...
Yeah.
Well, we could say that's our model of contribution, or and agree on it, and then it would be like that. And at the moment, it's even worse than that, because every change has to go through some development body, because they're the only ones that can check in packages. So that also doesn't really fit us. We looked at the most prominent ways to do it. I mean, there are numerous distributions that do either that the first way or the second way, but it doesn't really fit us. So we sat down and thought about that, how we can do our own process of contribution. In the end, we came down to the fact that we want to have this package-based and not people-based. So there's not a group of people that says, you're a good contributor, please come to our group and then you're allowed to contribute. We want to make that package-based, so that the human factor is only one factor of many. How that will work, I will explain in the next slides.
So there's a best software selected, and not any software, but a good guy builds. Yes.
So the requirements for our contribution process would be, as we said before, we want to make contributions as easy as possible. We want to involve all types of contributors, from people that just start learning Linux or start learning packaging or building software, up to the most powerful kernel hackers that want to submit a patch to us. Even if they're not from Nouvel or from Nouvel, it doesn't matter. And another requirement is that only the best packages become part of OpenSUSE, and not, like we said, some ideas of some guy. On the same time, OpenSUSE must be innovative, and at the same time, it must be stable. And that's a hard thing to do, because innovation usually leads to, tends to be unstable. But we need to keep the balance there. And of course, OpenSUSE must be secure and must be maintained. So these are the requirements for contribution process. And what we like to do is to do this package-based. And we will, our idea how to do this is to attach to each package, you attach a set of attributes. These attributes can hold various types of data, like numbers or bool values, yes, no, true, false, and stuff like that. And these attributes are on their own, they don't say anything. They just say something is installed 10,000 times, or the package is a year old, or the package exists since a year, or it says somebody reviewed the spec file. Well, on its own, it doesn't say anything. But all these attributes come from, or say, they hold something about quality. If a package is installed 1,000 times, then it's probably a used package, and people like that package, and it's probably more stable than some other package that's only installed 2 times. And you can, with these attributes, you can express all these values, like quality, security, is the package trusted, is it innovative, is there somebody that maintains it, or is it some dead package? And you can even have legal attributes, like is the software in the package is under an OSI approved license. When you have all these attributes, of course somebody must set them. For that you need info providers. Those can be manually, some guy sitting at a web front end and changing something. That can be automatically, like querying Bugzilla or querying the user rating trust system, querying Yast or some other tool of how, or download servers, how often the package gets used. You get lots of data from the build service, like how old is the package, how often does it get, is it rebuilt, and stuff like that. And of course you also get the info for some attributes from people, like the security team or the usability team or whatever. If you have all these attributes set from the info providers, you can then construct criteria from it. You can, for instance, say if the package is security relevant. So if it listens on the port and or is set UID or runs as a system daemon or runs a roof, you better not fuck up. If it's not, if it doesn't have all that, it's not very security relevant. Or you can construct quality values of packages. So for instance, if it has a stable version number, you get 100 points. If the upstream development is an active project, you get 50 more points. If it has a stable branch and a development branch, and you're using the stable branch, where the developer's upstream backport fixes, you get another amount of points. And you can construct these rules to set the quality value, and then you just can set, okay, I want in OpenSUSE, I only want to have packages with a quality value of, I don't know, 500. You can also express more detailed stuff like, do we want that package? For instance, if it provides a core functionality, we can't remove the kernel. If it provides core functionality, we probably want to have that package. If it's widely used, constructed all of the numbers of installs or whatever, or popularity, then we probably want to have it too, because we want to make the best Linux distribution for all people. And but you can also construct rules like don't change the default too often. So if it was part of the distro before, then it should be part of the distro again. If not, then not. And stuff like that. So you can create all kinds of logical rules. If you have these logical rules and they are written down somewhere, it's possible for everybody to understand them, because it's very easy logic, mostly yes, no, or true, false. And everybody understands it then, and everybody can follow them. And what it also does, it sets expectations on packages. How do we want to have packages in which state? Do we want to have bleeding edge stuff, or do we want to have the most stable stuff? That means you can, with these rules, you can just steer the distribution into one direction. And it's easy for everybody to understand. I mean, there are some negatives with it. It's an extra workload for the distribution owner, because he has to set up these rules and think about them. And our initially test runs on some test data showed that you probably need a lot of tweaking inside the rules, because we ended up with a distribution with only Ruby and something else. And but I mean, that either shows that there needs to be tweaking in the logic, or that we, at the moment, we are pretty lax with contributions from, which only happen inside NURL, but that could be the case. But it's easy to understand for everybody. It sets the right expectations on packages, and you can just steer the distribution with it.
What I would like to add is, of course, these rules are made with the intention that it's become transparent, but it doesn't work in only one direction. That it means, okay, now this week we have this package selection. It does work also in another direction. When you see the Linux kernel wouldn't be part of the distribution anymore, then you can look why. For example, because there are 5 open blocker bugs. of course, the solution is not to remove the Linux kernel, but to fix the blocker bugs, that we can release a product. And so in that way, we have also a quality assurance on this thing. At the moment, this is only playground. We play around. We have it in the public SVN now. And we have some test data. And the most important thing where we are working on is to get more data, input data, for example, from PDF, from Bugzilla, from the build service, and this in an automated way. But this is, at the moment, the idea we want to go, that we have a list and the plan. These packages should be part of the distribution. It's not intended to make this automatically, that it's really automatically the distribution gets recreated only by these rules, because for one reason, like I said before, okay, the kernel would get dropped. It's not an option because we want also the kernel in the beta, but we have to fix the bugs then to fulfill the requirements. Okay, this is one part. The other part is to working with the sources. So we have a number of packages somewhere in the build service in some projects, and there are different ways how to work with the sources and to contribute in these packages. And we have three scenarios, and again, these three scenarios are not exclusive. The build service will support, does support them already, or will support them all three. It's simply the standard use cases we think which are needed. For instance, there's an open project. An open project, again, has a number of packages and a number of users who are allowed to contribute there. Theoretically, also, everybody with an account could contribute there. This means that everybody can change everything inside. So, the good thing is, everybody can contribute, the effect is there, everybody sees it, can complain afterwards, fixes get immediately transported to the users. Good thing. The things might not work for some projects is that it's limited to peer review. Peer review again means that you review the changes afterwards, but not before. So this would not work with the EAL certification, for example. What can also happen is that you have, especially in large projects, imagine project X could be open to the factory. This could be a complete distribution. And you have two people there developing on binutils and the others developing on GCC, and the binutils guy makes a change, okay, the GCC things, then I need also the other change to be compatible, that it works again. Then the binutils, yes, okay, but then I need this. This means only these packages get changed all the time, and the system never gets the time to build all the other packages. This means the people on the low level block the work of all other people behind. And this is a realistic scenario, as we learned from our internal system. It's not fiction. What's also, okay, that can be good or bad, everybody can add and remove packages. Why it's listed as bad is that it's bad for the user experience, because it's not consolidated, the changes are not consolidated, and there might be no different reason for this. So it's good for adding something if someone has a good reason to add something, on the other hand, it can confuse people. There's another scenario. Set up one project and there is one administrator or a number of people who are administrators, and they grant access to packages to other people. That means he maintains who can contribute to this project, but the people itself can do anything what they want in their packages. That is a solution for have the patches to existing packages as fast as possible to the users and to work fast in this regard. But not to confuse the users anymore with permanently changing distribution, for example, because today somebody removed GNOME because he doesn't like it, the other day the other guy removes the other package because he doesn't like that. And if it's really that open, then we have some political problems, and it isn't a good marketing for the project. So basically, the admin defines the rules here, and the people can work under the rules in the packages. This is this scenario. And there's another scenario. That means the project itself is blocked. Only the admin here can do changes at all. But people can prepare changes in their own project. For example, they put a lawful patch to the Linux kernel. They build it here, they can prove it here that it works, users can use it already, and they can request this admin to merge it back. And this admin can say, okay, we merge it back after code review, because this is a scenario where code review before check-in does work, or he gives a reason why he can't merge it back for whatever. The disadvantage of this scenario is that the development speed in this project is not that fast as in the other scenarios. On the other hand, it's more consolidated. So where we want to go with the OpenSUSE distribution is another question, but in general all these three scenarios will be doable with the build service and will be able to set up such a scenario.
Project Y, will that not have the same disadvantages as the previous two, where it has in the process 1 or 2? Because there, you, in Project Y, you also need some process. Or how
right,
would you handle
you can
that?
Access. So how do you set up this one is again up to you. So you can select any of these scenarios here as well. Either it's your private project or it's an open project. Or anything between them. It's just even if the project is closed itself, there's still a chance to contribute to the project. That's what I want to say here.
With the disadvantages, probably, if you choose one of the previous two, that you can block the project.
Right. So,
but doesn't that mean if you choose this one and on project Y, you take one with where you can block it as a basic user, that you in the end block project X as well?
No, because the change here, it's only in effect when this guy merges this back. So if they have here their war, they can play and block this project, but they don't block this one. So the users will still have this stable base.
If project Y is blocked, it won't go to project X, so
right,
I
right.
block project X in the end as well. So all the disadvantages...
No, because... Okay, and they don't get any conclusion. Then still someone else can make a project Z here and contribute also direct to this one.
Okay.
So that's their personal problem that they block each other, but it doesn't stop anyone else from working. Yeah. So this is just an example setup with a build service, how it could be implemented. That's the first version. We have the example of the three contributors because I thought about how we can involve the normal people in OpenSUSE so that they want to work there, that they contribute, still contribute, that we don't separate, but that we still have the freedom to change something in OpenSUSE, that we don't rely on NoRep in any case. In this scenario, it's a complete own project in OpenSUSE. OpenSUSE itself selects some packages from SUSE Linux Enterprise, for instance the Xorg. Xorg is perfect, we can directly use it, so we make a source link, we don't have to deal with our own Xorg in OpenSUSE, we simply use this. Another thing is the glibc, we think, okay, glibc is great, but this patch which speeds up Oracle databases very heavily, it causes problem on end-user desktops, so we don't want it. So we can still use the glibc from the novel providers, but we simply skip a patch or add an additional patch or any modification we want. But that means that OpenSUSE just need to maintain the patch and not the rest of the glibc. And for example, for the kernel, it could be that it's completely separated. Just an example. That there's a complete other group and they develop a way better kernel, and we have seen it based on the rules described by Henne, the other kernel is way better. And well, then it's a problem of Novell that the contributions for OpenSUSE and the one for SRE don't align anymore, and it's responsible to find out how we can merge back on a central base. And I see the Novell employees as responsible on this regard. But it doesn't block OpenSUSE in any way, because OpenSUSE is free to do what OpenSUSE wants to do. Similar scenario is that could be also implemented that we don't rely on the sources, but we work on the binary level. That means we have the SUSE Linux Enterprise stuff in the SRE project, we have it visible in the build service, and we just reuse the resulting RPM repository and build on top the factory distribution. We could exchange also the kernel, for instance, in this example, because we built a different one there, and we have a resulting repository where these changes get merged together on a binary level. It's both possible to set up. We need to find out in which way we want to go. Okay, what's missing in the build service to do this actually is, and what means where we need to work on, is the efficient patch handling. For now, it's you can already make create these source projects with additional patches, linking to another one and add a patch on it. But it's not very efficient to work on this right now. So we want to extend OSC in the SVN like that. Simply can say OSC edit kernel, and then you want to check out the kernel from the factory, for example, to modify it, and you want to commit it back, and then the system says, ah, you don't have write permissions here. But do you want to create, make this a suggestion? So the system would automatically set up a linked project with a patch inside. It shows that the patch is working there, people see the result of this patch, can test it, and this one can be merged back. And this needs to be efficient, that the contribution is efficient. On the other hand, the merge handling needs to get improved. So it would be important that you first see all linked projects, you see all the modifications of your package. So you have contributed one package, and there are five people now who modified something in their own project, so you want to see these changes. You want to see what they have changed, maybe with the reason in the changelog, and you want either to merge them easily, accepting these changes, or you want to give them a reason why you don't want to check in this because it breaks some other scenario. On the other hand, you want also to see if their packages have been built successfully and if the users like this. So all this needs to be visible in the merge handling. The package requirements needs to be defined. That's what Henne told you about before. We have a stub of that in SVN and in the wiki page. The requirements have also some part of the trust system, so it's that people can rate other people in the system. It's still an influence in this package approach. And we want to have as much as statistics as we can. So everything what we can automate, for instance, download numbers, bug statistics, votings in the build service and so on, needs to be in relation. And all this needs to be made visible with a clear user interface in the build service, that everybody can say, yes, it's transparent, I understand why this package doesn't go in, and I will work on that, that it can go in. Yeah.
Questions?
We hope you have questions.
You've talked a lot about making the process for packages to contribute. Have you got any plans for enabling developers to contribute to courses such as, say, Yes? this only 2 or 3 have the SVM repositories, so that's does that tie into this system as well?
You mean that somebody can work? You mean that somebody can work on Yext, for instance?
That's the example.
Sure, that would be well. If you have all these 3 schemes how you can do it, then the Yext team has to decide if they want to.
The Yext team currently just bought a new SVN server to become to get a public SVN server, and also the mailing list will go out. So we are just in the last steps of discussing this.
But for in general, it's the decision of the project then, if it's the Yext project or the Kernel project. Or
could you tie in, say, the access control for the project to, say, the source control system as well to allow the contributors to contribute?
You mean that either you have access rights to the project on and write permissions or you don't? That's what Adrian said, that if you don't have write permissions, then the system will tell you, okay, you don't have write permissions, but you can make that a suggestion for the project owner.
But is the build service part connected to the source revision control for the entire server?
No.
Not yet.
You mean the source revision of Yext?
Your whatever project.
No, not yet. Because mostly...
Yeah, just to compare, if you really want to work on Yext, then the build service is not the right place. Because the build service is a place where you work on the packages, on the distribution, and so on. If you are really a Yext developer, you should directly work in the Yext SVN.
I was wondering if there was plans to formalize the ways to contribute the developers as well as packages.
Well, what you can do, you can. With this scheme, you can just check out the Yext SVN, build your own Yext, build your patches on top of it, and either prove that you are the better Yext developer than the Yext team, or you can, well, Yext is a bad example for that, but for other packages, you can just prove that your package is better and you're the better packager for that, and with the rules and attributes, you can just easily prove that. And of course, if you want to work on a bigger project, then it's how this project is set up, how Yext is set up, or how the kernel is set up, and that has not much to do with the build service.
There's no unique answer to how a project is set up. That's the reason why we need really all 3 models, because there are so many requirements also within the public open source project that they want to work in this special way, and we need to support them all. There's no way that we can normalize the work of all open source projects. So,
okay. Any other questions?
So if I understand it correctly, it would be theoretically possible that the enterprise has a different kernel than the open.
Yes.
Open,
yes.
Which is related perhaps to what license it will be going to be.
What the reason is. No, but the thing is that unlike other projects, we really want to show still what the enterprise projects have in the build service, because we think it doesn't mean that OpenSUSE has to use it, but it's of course, in any case, a very, very valuable input.
Okay, and in a bad if the bad thing happens and the Linux community will not accept the new kernel of Novel, OpenSUSE could use a kernel version that will be accepted by the version 3 of
Novel. And it's a problem of Novel that there's a fork.
That's their problem.
So, okay. The employees have to either live with this or to work on it that it can be merged back.
But it will not influence OpenSUSE as such, because we can still make a kernel which is acceptable for the Linux community.
Right.
Is it still like the idea that enterprise editions depends on .1 open releases?
There's no general rule. There's That depends on the timelines of the project.
It has been so far the last 2 years.
Yes, but that's more or less luck or bad luck or whatever.
But it's okay to say that for every say n open source releases, you've written one and then you take the photograph for the next enterprise.
Yes, OpenSUSE will be the base distribution also for future novel enterprise projects. Yes, definitely.
We've seen perfect compatibility from packages from 9.1 to Enterprise 9. We've seen compatibility from packages
It's based. There's still additional work. There can be incompatibilities. There's no guarantee because there are different requirements. And we
so one idea to give to you is maybe to take that period of time on releases
between one photograph and the next one. This is maybe a path of time you have to decide when someone who's contributing is quite mature or not, using maybe your system as ratings or.
Yes, it has.
But maybe the implication to include a package from a contributor which is not core, it maybe would be useful to include in a release that you know that you won't broke anything on a enterprise edition. I mean,
yes.
I don't know if I'm able to.
But the idea is that the enterprise people actively work all the time with the system. It's not that OpenSUSE is doing something, releases it, and then the enterprise product will change the other stuff. The way we want to work is that the enterprise people work all the time within OpenSUSE, contribute their stuff, and that it fits also for them in an acceptable way for the OpenSUSE community.
Right. The time factor was you are not enforced by time, so you can wait lots of months just to decide.
That's up to them. Okay, right. Martin gave me a signal that you should stop.
Okay, maybe the last question from you.
My question is that when you say the novel the enterprise edition contributions, are you saying that the enterprise edition will be built using the OpenSUSE boot service, or?
No, it will be built internally, definitely, for customer reasons and so on. But the sources can be visible in the build service as well. So there will be two build systems, but they will communicate each other.
But the source won't be synchronized.
Right. Actually, there shouldn't be a synchronized needed because it shouldn't matter if a package is used in both, if you commit it internally or externally. It shouldn't simply matter. It's simply someone committed something, it's visible to all, and all can work together.